Well, good morning. Good morning. Turn to Nehemiah. Nehemiah. It's always a fun thing to for me. I don't know why. Sometimes I see even share things with you that to me are even funny. But I was always taught that an introduction to a lesson was one of the most important things. And as I think of names of lessons, and as we try and put together what Kelly is doing on Wednesday nights with what we're doing on Sunday mornings, it struck me that Nehemiah had this vision, but the vision had to come to reality, and so to get a vision to reality sometimes is a tough process. And I was thinking of when I was a little kid and the fact that the things that I wanted to do, the things that I wanted to do as a kid, my first recollection of my first goal as to what I was going to be when I grew up was a clown. I wanted to be a clown. I mean, not a goofball clown, but I mean a clown. With the nose and the, I used to be able to juggle, and for some reason or another, I've forgotten how to juggle. But even as a little kid, I could juggle, and I would dress as a clown for certain Halloweens, and then I grew out of that somehow or another. But I found some slides, and I'm really bummed because I had saved a bunch of these during the course of several months. In preparation for a sermon like this, I sometimes find things, and then when I tried to open those particular files, they wouldn't open. So Shane's been really good about helping me, clearly put together some slides. So these are not up to par, but I think they'll still do our thing. But these kids were asked what they wanted to be when they were growing up, and if you can't see that because it's not super clear, it says, "Name Frankie, I earn money at home by," and he says, "I don't. I'm a freeloader." that's a little kid. I think this is first graders. This little boy, "When I grow up, I want to be a dog." That's his vision. I don't know how he's going to make that a reality. This next one says, "I will never get married." And then the little boy is laying on the couch and says, "This is the life." that's what it is. Now, this one is interesting. You'll notice that people are giving money to the lady on the pole, right? It looks like it says, "When I grow up, I want to be like mommy." And if you'll notice, there's a letter below that. And essentially, the letter says, "From the mother, I am not a stripper. I have never been a stripper. I work at Home Depot. And there was one shovel left in the last snowstorm, and everybody was trying to buy it from me." So the kids are... That was my favorite slide of all time. Because you never know. And I love the... "I told my daughter how hectic it was last week because of the blizzard, And so I thought that was pretty funny. And then my favorite from the Minions, my mom said, "Follow your dreams." So I went back to bed. All right, because that's a place to dream. You're not going to accomplish too many dreams, but we know there are two types of dreams, right? There's those that you have in your head, but then there are those that God puts on your heart. Or maybe it's not God, maybe it's something else. And you want those dreams, right, to come to reality, but there's a step-by-step process that has to happen. And sometimes that's the difficult part. We know what the dream is, but getting that dream to reality is pretty hard. Kelly, he's been, I do this because when I come in and practice during the week, a lot of times his notes are still on this board, and so I'll look across there, and he had the step-by-step process, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but one of the last things he talked about was this vision, and then he drew an arrow, right? And it was like, where does that go? Nehemiah has this dream. He has this desire that's put on his heart to go back to a city that he's probably never been to. I mean, they've been exiles for 70 years. Nehemiah is not 70 years old, but he wants to go back to the city that he loves that he's never been to. And I don't know about you guys, but I think the perfect example of this is years and years ago when we lived in Sweetwater, Texas, and we were doing youth ministry. We had a trip that we planned, and it was just for high school students. We made it a special trip. It was a camping trip at Sue Whitman's house. She lived about an hour and a half away. in basically a, it almost looked like a desert looking area. It was just a very ugly area, very sandy, very kind of dirty and stuff. And just, it just wasn't a very pretty place. And the very first time I went to go see her place, I thought, I'm not going to take a bunch of teenagers to come camping in a desert, you know, essentially. But you would go on down her property place, and then it headed down toward this river. And down at the river, there were all these beautiful trees, and we bought hammocks, and we put hammocks in between the trees, and the kids could get on a paddle boat and go canoeing, and we would cook, and it was just, and we called it the Oasis trip. It was a trip where the kids weren't allowed to have any electronics. There was no music. There was nothing. We would go and we would read and we would eat and we would laugh and we would play. And it was a trip where the teenagers could literally get away. And we did too. And it was a great trip. And we did all, I have more memories from that trip. And some of the teenagers will say, oh, I remember at Whitman's, Sue Whitman's house. But when we did an exit poll one year, we were asking the kids, middle school and high school, if we were going to keep one thing, you know, what would you want to keep? And we did work camps and we did regular camps and all this other stuff. But the number one thing, it was like a 96%, you know, the teenager said, we want to make sure if there's a youth program, you know, a calendar for the year, make sure Sue Whitman's is there. And then, what was it, 90% of the middle school students put Sue Whitman's trip. And that was incredible because they'd never been. But they were like looking forward to it, right? My thinking is, here's Nehemiah, and he's had to have been told about Jerusalem and had to have been told about the temple and the people sitting around the campfire as we did at Sue Whitman's place and told these stories. And so Nehemiah has this vision in his head. He has this idea of what Jerusalem would have been like. And we talked about it this morning, you know, these wow moments in our lives. And I try and explain things to people. My wow moment's the Grand Canyon. Another wow moment is standing, you know, on the California beach and overlooking that beautiful coast. And you try and explain it, and people go, oh, yeah, it sounds really cool. And you're like, no, it's better than what you're thinking, because you can see them kind of go, oh, yeah, yeah. And you're like, no. You should be more excited than that, because it is an incredible experience. That's what I kind of feel like Nehemiah is having, because I don't feel like he ever went to Jerusalem. I mean, he was exiled. They're stuck where they're stuck. And yet, he's like, I want to go rebuild the city of my fathers. I want to experience that wow moment that everyone else is talking about and that they've passed on for years and years. And so that's what's been put on his heart. Look at Nehemiah chapter 2, 11 through 20. And we kind of see some of the vision that he has turn into some of this reality. So he says, I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one I was riding on. By night, I went out through the valley gate toward the jackal well and the dung gate. Deanne and I were talking about this. That gate is still there in Jerusalem. There's only two of the gates that are still there, but the dung gate, that's obviously where they would go and put their stuff whenever they would get rid of all their yucky stuff. Examining the walls of Jerusalem, and I'm assuming that's why I'm assuming the dung gate was still there, right? It's like, hey, go destroy that gate. No, it's okay. You guys go destroy that gate. I'm not going anywhere near that spot. Anyway, I have no idea. That's just the way I think. Anyway, examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broken down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. Then I moved on toward the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was not enough room for my mount to get through, so I went up the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back. I re-entered through the valley gate. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because as yet, I had said nothing to the Jews or to the priests or the nobles or the officials or any others who would be doing the work. Not expressed his heart. Kelly talked about this, you know, he has this vision, he knows what God's put on his heart, but he doesn't tell anybody yet because he wants to see what has to happen first and all the things that have to take place. I'm looking kind of at Stephen, like you've had that before. Oh, we have a little job for you to do. And you're like, well, I'll come by and look at it. It's not a little job. It turns out you're like, oh, I got to do this and this and this. And you guys know, right? You start tearing into something and all of a sudden you go, I thought I had 2 jobs. Now I have 10. Right? I mean, everybody knows when you start doing renovations. So he's checking it out. He's figuring it out. He's not telling anybody yet, but he has this vision. Then I said to them, you see the trouble we're in? Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace. Because that wall represents our relationship with God. That's a big part of this story. I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me, and they replied. I mean, he tells his vision here. He shares his story, and they say, let's start rebuilding. So they began this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked us and ridiculed us. What's this you're doing? They asked. Are you rebelling against the king? I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you will have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it. We talked a little bit about this last week, but do you have a vision? You know, do you have a goal? Do you have something in mind that you go, you know, I think God's put that on my heart? How do you get that vision to reality? Right? There's some incredible thoughts within this passage and some things that I want to share with you this morning. Because it seems to me that, which is the reason I preached the lesson last week on qualifications, there are times when we get something put on our heart and we go, well, I'm not qualified to do that. I don't have the ability to do that. And so last week I talked about this passion, right? That the number one qualification Nehemiah had was his passion. He had a passion for God, a passion for people, and he had a desire to get the job done. So if you have that desire, you're qualified, right? You may not have any abilities in that particular area. Maybe, perhaps, maybe you do. But God says, you know what? If you have a passion and I'm on your side, you will get this accomplished. And I know when God has given me a task personally, he usually equips me to accomplish the task. That's how there's times when I feel like I've got this task to do, that God's given me this idea, and I start down this path, and sometimes I'm not talking to God about it as much as I should, and I'm thinking, hey, Mike can handle this, and Mike and Karen will do it together, or I'll get the right people in the right place to accomplish the task, and nothing falls into place. Doesn't seem like I get any equipping. You know, nothing goes right. And there's times when those obstacles need to be overcome, and there's other times when those obstacles should be looked at as God's not in on this deal. You know, that was your vision, but I'm not so sure it was God's vision. And so you need to be careful about those kinds of things. But when the going gets tough, sometimes people quit, right? When obstacles occur, but not Nehemiah. There's some really neat stories here. And Nehemiah knows God's involved because God is providing every step of the way the tools necessary. He's equipping Nehemiah to accomplish this task, including letting the king of a pagan nation pay for everything. I mean, that's the bestest part, right? To not only have the vision to rebuild Jerusalem, but allow a pagan king to pay for it and allow that pagan king to give back all of the stuff that they stole from the nation to begin with. I mean, it's a pretty cool deal what God did. There's a story about a lady by the name of Betty Nesmith. It's not necessarily a modern day story because it's from the 1950s, but it's a very similar story in my mind. It's just a story of success. Betty Nesmith was a secretary for a Dallas company. She's a Texan, right? Dallas, Texas. She is... Her husband divorced her and left her with one son, and she needed to go to work. So she got a job. She was an artist, went to school to be an artist, wanted to be an artist, but, you know, life is life. And so she went to work as a secretary for a company, and she's typing. Now, for some of you, typewriters used to be these little machines that would be similar to a keyboard, but they actually printed things on paper, you know. So some of you may have seen that. I had the oldest typewriter in the world. It typed in pencil. So that's a joke from, Stephen Wright. Anyway, so had this, I had several typewriters, and if you'll remember, when you would make a mistake, you'd have to fix it somehow. They used to have these little slide things, and you'd reverse, but it'd leave a, yeah, Santa's remembering this. It's like, ah, right? So Betty Nesmith got sick and tired of the mistakes. She didn't like the mistakes, and she, because she was an artist, she remembered, hey, when you paint something and you mess it up, what do? Prime it out. You just cover it up, right? You just get over it. So Betty Nesmith goes home. She gets some of her tempura paints and different things, and she makes this color paint, this stuff she called mistake out, to cover up her mistakes. So she creates it in her kitchen, and she puts it on her mistakes and types over them. It's like, ooh, good stuff for me. And so one of the other secretaries sees her using it someday, and she goes, what is that? She goes, well, I call it mistake out. She goes, don't tell anybody. So her boss doesn't. She goes, it looks like I'm not making any mistakes anymore. She apparently wasn't a very good typist, and so she's constantly using this mistake out. And so out of need, she creates this stuff. So long story short, she recognizes other secretaries are like, we need this stuff. This is great stuff, right? And, you know, we need some liquid paper. And so she starts manufacturing and gives it to more and more secretaries, and more people want it. And so she goes to IBM, she goes to all these big, big companies and says, hey, I've got this stuff. I call it mistake out. Would you be interested in buying it? No, 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 no. Everywhere she goes, no, 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 no. Everybody tells her, hey, you're a secretary, you're a woman, you know, in the 50s, you know, quit trying to be an inventor, just do your own thing. And she's like, no, I've got this really cool idea. So she creates her own laboratory, so to speak, and she gets her son to help and neighbors to help, and she creates this whiteout, right, business, and makes $3.5 million per year selling this stuff. And finally, the Gillette Company, buys it from her for $47.5 million, right? Success story. I love success stories. Now, the coolest thing about this, when I was doing a little bit more research so I would know some dates and times and stuff, I looked at it more and more, and I'm thinking, Nesmith. I know that name, Nesmith. You know her son? Michael Nesmith of the Beatles. I mean, of the Monkees. That was her son who helped her bottle and create and stuff. So she created Whiteout, and she created Michael Nesmith. Two famous things, right? That's pretty cool. I love the Monkees. That was one of my favorite shows ever growing up. I knew that name. But there's success stories like that all over the place. You know, there are other success stories. I guess you can't really call them success stories. That could have been success stories, but they don't happen because people stop. You know, they hear no, or they get ridiculed, or they get made fun of, or you're too young to do that, or you're too old to do that, or you're too stupid to do that, or you're not talented enough to do that. And people go, okay, and they buy into that, and then they don't finish what they start because they have a vision, but then because of the Sanballats and the Tobias and the Geshems of life, they quit working at it. And so it's important for us to realize that when we start involving ourselves in a vision, especially those that God puts in our heart, we're going to face some obstacles. Okay, it's going to happen. It's just a reality. When I was growing up, the word endurance was defined to me as a keeping on, keeping on. You know, that's the definition I remember as a child. If you want to have endurance, you need to keep on keeping on. And to me, that's what Nehemiah does. He just keeps on keeping on. He doesn't allow any of the things that take place throughout the entire book of Nehemiah. He doesn't allow people, doesn't allow circumstances, doesn't allow setbacks to deter him from completing this wall. And it's an incredible story. But when we're given a task to complete, right, there will be obstacles, there will be negativity, there will be times when people are going to tell us we can't do what we're doing. I wanted to share another story. You guys know who this is, but I'll share it with you anyway. At the age of seven, he had to work long, hard hours, seven-year-old, because his dad wasn't in the picture. At the age of 9, his mother died. At the age of 22, he lost his first job as a store clerk. At the age of 23, he wanted to be a legislator. To do that back then, you had to test to be a legislator. He tested. There were 12 that tested. He finished 8th. They only took the top 4, so he failed. Couldn't be a legislator. So he started a business at the age of 23 and a half. And about the age of 24, he and his partner's business went bankrupt. They did not do good. They opened a general store, and they worked hard, but it just didn't pan out. I love the fact that he paid back every cent that he owed in that. And then his partner died about a year and a half later, and he paid back his partner's debt. And I thought that was pretty impressive for this man. At the age of 25, of the 13 running to be legislator, he won a seat with the second highest vote total. So finally, at the age of 25, woo! You know, a success story. Something good happens. At the age of 26, his sweetheart dies suddenly. Was going to be engaged and possibly married. At the age of 29, he lost a bid to become Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives. At age 35, he failed to receive his party's district nomination for Congress. At the age of 37, woo! One more little nugget, he wins the nomination and seat for Congress. But at the age of 40, he lost a bid to become Commissioner of the General Land Office. At 45, he didn't receive enough votes for the U.S. Senate seat in Illinois. At the age of 47, he was nominated for vice presidential candidacy but didn't receive enough votes. Who is he? Abraham Lincoln, right? Just keeps going, though. At the age of 51, becomes President of the United States. And again, at the age of 55. Incredible story of a guy who heard no. Lots of failures. Lots of things go wrong in his life. Lots of naysayers. One of the greatest presidents probably ever lived. Pretty impressive guy. If you go back and you read more about Abraham Lincoln, it's quite impressive. Nehemiah was a man with a big dream. And he faces some setbacks too. Not quite like a Abraham Lincoln, not quite like a Betty Nesmith did. But, you know, in our lives, we've got to think ourselves through that. Because there's times when we know God has put something on our heart. And yet, we allow people or circumstances to push us away from fulfilling that dream. And I think it's really important for us to continue to do what Nehemiah did. Nehemiah began with prayer, did a whole lesson on that he started with prayer. He continued with prayer. He ended most of his stories with prayer. He was a praying guy, and that's how I think he accomplished so much of what he did. Kelly's been talking about on Wednesday nights that we need to protect our mind and we need to protect our heart, and how important that is to put these walls up, right? That we, in a spiritual way, need to build these walls around us to protect the things that God is trying to accomplish in our lives. And I like that, the analogy of building a wall and protecting ourselves, right? There are things that we don't need to see. There are, you know, protect our eyes. There are things we don't need to participate in, so we protect our heart and these circumstances. One author wrote this: Satan hates it when God's people are successful in their calling. I mean, he hates it. Why would he not? Because every time a Christian wins a spiritual battle or remains faithful to see a work done, it gives the devil a black eye, and the devil hates looking through swollen eyelids. So the devil's going to use every tool at his disposal. God is going to provide for us tools at his disposal. And there are times when we need to recognize which tool is from God and which tool is from Satan. I think two of the greatest tools this morning that Satan uses in this story is this guy by the name of Sanballat and this guy by the name of Tobiah. They had an alternative plan. They had some different ideas in their mind as to what God was trying to accomplish, and they certainly didn't want to see the walls rebuilt. My question this morning is, you ever met a Sanballat or a Tobiah? The negative Nelly, the detractor from your goals and your abilities. I mean, they say things like this: that won't work, I tried it already. I love that one. I love that when I'm coaching bowling. That's one of my favorite things, and somebody says, that won't work, dude. That doesn't work. I'm like, really? You know, and I even love it even more when somebody says, well, that may work on the left side, it won't work on the right side. Well, I can bowl right-handed too. I'm like, oh, really? Well, let me show you something. Throw it, and they're like, oh, well. I'm like, well, it worked for you. Quit being a negative. Hey, you've got this in your brain. You know, you don't want to see this kid be successful because he's going to be your kid, right? Why don't you just be happy for success? Success is a good thing. What makes you think you can do that? You're doomed to fail. Get your head out of the clouds. Be realistic. Even if you accomplish your goal, this is my favorite, even if you accomplish your goal, it won't last. Why is it that folks have a tendency to want to drag us down? Somebody says, well, they want to drag you down because they want you to be on their level. remember that years ago? Get off my level. The kids were using this kind of analogy about levels. But it's important. It's so important this morning for us to realize that there are Sanballats and Tobias. And we don't need to be the Sanballats and Tobias. We don't need to be the negative. We need to be really careful that we're being positive and helping people understand this. So sometimes the Sanballats and Tobias in our lives are friends who are really secret enemies. You remember the story, Sanballat and Tobiah try and befriend Nehemiah. They want to kind of get in their inner circle and say, hey, we want to hang out. We're going to help. We'll be in there to help you. And he's like, no, you have no part in this building. Here's something else. And I know the scripture this morning, I appreciate Brad reading it for us. It kind of seems almost out of place. But it struck me as important that Nehemiah waits to share his vision. He waits for the right people who are going to share the vision with him. He doesn't share it with somebody who are going to tear it down and destroy it. And I think we need to be very careful who we share our visions with, who we share things that are important to us. I know in Matthew chapter 7, verse 6, this Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is really talking more along the lines of, hey, you're going to give this beautiful gospel, this incredible message of grace, and some people just will not accept it. And I've been there, done that. I mean, you know real quick, I'm going to try and share the gospel with this person, but, it's just like throwing my pearls before swine and throwing them before they're not going to care. It's not important to them. Don't give dogs what's sacred. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they'll trample them under their feet. They'll turn and tear you to pieces. He's simply saying, pick your spots. Right? If you're going to share the gospel, and it's a commission to share the gospel. It's a commission to tell the good news. But there are times when it just, don't waste your time. I've had people say to me, hey, you need to work on that guy. And I'm like, you know what? That guy's a pig. And I'm like, it's a biblical thing, And they just look at me and I went, I don't have time to throw my pearls to that pig. I mean, I got plenty of folks to work with. There's plenty of folks that need the gospel and they're not pigs and they're not dogs. And I don't mean that. And Jesus doesn't mean it in a horrible way. He's just simply saying they're not interested, right? You don't put pearl necklaces and golden necklaces on pigs. Well, some people probably do, but it's an idea that he's saying here that just pick your spots if you're going to share. I believe that Nehemiah chose very carefully who he was sharing this vision with. And when he finally told him this vision, he told it with passion and excitement. And he said, hey, let me tell you what the king has done. Let me tell you what God has done. And let me tell you what I want to do. And I've gone out and I surveyed it all. And here's our job. Here's what we're going to do. And they're like, in. Let's build it. Let's go. I'm ready. Let's fire this thing up. Right? Sometimes we share those visions with people that aren't interested and they go, oh, that's a terrible idea. Or, oh, that's... And it kind of just deflates us and pulls us down. Well, I guess it wasn't as good an idea as I thought. Be careful who you share your visions with. We need to understand that when we do share our visions, we're going to hear some negativity. And there's times when if it's something God wants us to do, we just need to overcome. We need to keep on keeping on. We need to pray for God as Nehemiah did last week. We talked about this. He asked God to strengthen his hands. Right? Don't get rid of my enemies. Strengthen my hands. I know this is what you want me to do, God. Strengthen my hands. Help me to be more bold. Because when God's goals are our goals and when our goals are God's goals, you know good and well God's going to help us with it. You want to go out and build a business and do that over there. If that's something God wants you to do and you're going to be able to give glory to him through that, that's great. But if it's something for you and it only represents what you want, whether or not God's going to help you or not, I have no idea. I have no idea. But if you use it for the glory of God, God's going to be impressed and God's going to be on board. And I know when our goals are God's goals, we can expect success. But I also know we can expect some Sanballats and Tobias in our lives. So be ready for that. And then just keep on keeping on. Don't quit. I think that's the message this morning. If you want to turn your vision into reality, be positive. Pray. Understand if it's God's vision for you. And if it is, then jump in with both feet, with all of your being. Roll up your sleeves and get to work. And you will be successful. And as a congregation, we will be successful. Maybe you're struggling with something this morning. We always offer an invitation, something that if we can do anything for you, pray for you, help in any way, please let us do that. We're going to sing a song Matt has for us. So please stand and let's sing.